So this afternoon, after we finish lunch, we may be going outside for circumambulation. So if you think that you need to put on a jacket, it's warm outside, it's sunny and warm. But if you think that you want to put on the jacket, when I'm answering these questions, feel free to get up and put on your jacket, because we immediately go outside to circumambulate. So the first question: why do men and women sit on opposite sides of the meditation hall? Well, we answer that question many times. In a monastery or in a nunnery, monks or nuns, they lead a celibate life. No man and woman relationship. They lead a celibate, pure, clean life. And so, during meditation, if you mix the men and the women together, particularly if it's a large group, they may bump into each other. There may be body contact involuntarily, body contact. And we want to avoid that kind of body contact, because if you always subject yourself to body contact of the opposite sex, or if you subject yourself to appearances or video appearances of the opposite sex, that would instigate your sexual behavior. So that goes on to further further exposition that nowadays we have a lot of multi-telecommunication network. There are pros and cons in having massive telecommunication network. In the old days, we don't have that. And if you want to get videos, you have to rent it. But now you don't have to. It's easily accessible in the internet. For that reason, youngsters can get access to indecent videos. And if they always diverge themselves in those videos, it would affect their life. They may spend hours and hours on certain videos that they shouldn't be seeing. Their moms and dads may not even know about them. So it's just like a knife. It's good if it's sharp. You can utilize it to cut things, but you can also utilize it to cut yourself. There's always pros and cons in certain things. The issue is, how can you control yourself? Can you control yourself? Even adults cannot control themselves. How can children control themselves? I have seen adults who spent 4 or 5 hours in videos, in Facebook, on unnecessary stuff. And on games, computer games. I was told when I was in Hong Kong that the household head of the who is 30-something years old, and after work, he came home, and then he opened his computer, get onto the computer games, and played until 7:30 dinner time. And after eating, during eating dinner, he used to play on the computer games, and then he continued until midnight. And he got crazy. The wife got crazy, the children were ignored. So there's a lot of problems in that. So if you are exposed to many of those things, it's not good for you, unless you have good control. But who can control themselves? Who always come to the meditation class? Another secondary objective of meditation class is being able to control your own mind. stop those things that you shouldn't be doing. But how many people come to meditation class? How many people would spend hours and hours watching unnecessary videos as compared to people who spend half an hour in a meditation class meditating? No one. Very few people would come on a Saturday morning to a temple spiritually and do meditation for half an hour. But millions of people would spend many, many hours on unnecessary videos in telecommunications. So you know what kind of society we are running into, we are marching into, we're getting into. So you're asking me, why do they sit opposite each other? We don't want too much exposure. We don't want too much body touch. We were concerned that we may not have the control. So that's the reason why we avoid it first. If you have good control, you don't need to avoid it, right? If you can control yourself, your mom does not need to take away your computer. But are you in control? There's so many beginners in meditation. If you're not in control, here's a lady sitting next to me and she looks great, so you just bump into her. You are just a beginner. You thought that coming to a meditating class is a social activity, that you would get to know girls. Now, there are people like that. There are people who go to churches not because of spiritual reason, because they want to strike up acquaintances with beautiful girls, handsome guys. They have their primary objective is to get to know people. So that's the reason why we put them on the opposite side. How come you ask this question? Maybe you are first-time comers. If I mix them, you will ask the same question. How come you mix them? So, next. What is the meaning of the large reclining Buddha in the cafeteria? To make you comfortable. To make you feel that it's very comfortable. When a Buddha is sleeping, that's how he's sleeping, always on the right side. And when a Buddha passed away in the Nirvana, that's the position that he was taking when he was passing away in Nirvana. So, it does not matter in what posture you maintain. You could be sitting, you could be walking, you could be reclining, you could be sleeping. You always maintain the purity of mind. Does not matter what posture you are maintaining at that moment. You always maintain that purity of mind wherever you are, whether you are in silence, in quietude, or you are in a boisterous situation. Or whether you are in peace or you encounter atrocities. You're still in a purity situation. You're always in meditation. It does not matter what postures. Not just sitting, not just with leg crossed that you are purifying yourself in a meditation state. No. When you're sleeping, when you're reclining, when you are sitting, when you're walking, when you're running, even when you're talking, you always maintain that equanimity of mind, that peace inside of you. That peace is extremely important. This morning we were talking about happiness. If I can define for you, if I can, what is happiness, I would say happiness is to have peace of mind. If you don't have peace of mind, it does not matter how much money you have. It does not matter what properties you hold. It does not matter anything if you don't have peace of mind. But if you have that peace of mind, that's my definition, you have happiness. But even that peace of mind, how long would that peace of mind be? An hour? Half an hour? 2 hours? Certainly, I don't think anybody would have peace of mind in every second of their life. But you're looking for that. You strive to look for that peace of mind. And some people say, what's the meaning of life? Let's not talk about happiness. I read a book, that's a very famous book, maybe 25 million copies sold. It's written by Victor, it's a German, a German in Nazi Germany concentration camp, who was with the Jewish population, and he was able to avoid death, one out of a million. And he survived, and he wrote a book. His first name is Victor, I forgot his last name, 25 million copies sold. It's become a classic, you should read it. And what's the title of that book? Man in Search of Meaning. It doesn't say man in search of happiness. It says man in search of meaning. To have happiness is to live meaningfully. To have happiness is to have meaning in life. If you don't have meaning in life, you're living like a corpse. You've got to have that meaning. You strive to perfect that meaning, to fulfill that meaning. Do you have a meaning in life? I don't have any meaning in life. I'm looking for happiness, venerable. I'm looking for happiness, but I don't have any meaning in life. I said, no. Don't look for that happiness. Throw that happiness away. But look for a meaning. We're in search of meaning. You have a meaning to. Do you have a meaning to live? If you don't have even a meaning to live, forget about happiness. You have a meaning to live, you're striving for that happiness. So we should not just read Buddhist teaching books. We should be reading other books too. An excellent book, In Search of Meaning. I read it all the time. Not just once. It's the I we seek, not the I that has manifested in this form. Or he or she must be listening to lectures all the time. Because this is an intelligent question. I am not the I that has manifested in this form. Yeah. If not, how can karma be at work? It's the I we seek, not the I that was manifested in this form. If the I you seek is not the true I. Anything you're seeking is not true. Are you still seeking? It's there. You just have to reveal it. It's a revelation instead of a seeking for it. The Heart Sutra said, there's no sound, no smell, no touch, no eye, no ear, no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance. No suffering, no cause of suffering, no extinction, no path. There's nothing to be obtained. What are you seeking? You don't have to seek. You just have to stop running. When you stop, it reveals. You stop adding on dust onto your mirror of purity. You stop adding on dust on it. And at the same time, you are eradicating the dust on the mirror top, then it's there. It's just the dust that cover it. It hasn't lost its reflectability. The dust just cover it. It hasn't lost the reflectability. So, it's the I we seek, not the I that has manifested in this form. The I that is manifested in the form that you and I appear is not the true I. It's the body. It's the karmic body. It's the hotel that we're staying in for this lifetime. What hotel you're staying in? A 5-star? A 2-star motel? 3-star? You work it out yourself. You chose it yourself. If you did the right thing karmically in your previous lifetime, that is, you are generous, you are benevolent to people, you cultivate, you germinate all these good causes, then when you roll into the next life, into the next karmic body, You roll into a 6-star hotel, a presidential suite. Well, the presidents who live in presidential suites, cabinet minister suites. So what do you prefer? Which hotel do you prefer? Is karmically, you work it out yourself. In other words, do you deserve? You deserve what you are having. If you are in a 1-star hotel, nobody gives it to you. You deserve it. You didn't work out. So the one that the eye that you are seeking is not the true eye. When you say I, that is necessarily a not I notion. When you're living in I and not I, hate and love, rich and poor, you're living in a world of, in a state of discrimination. You're not at it. You are fallaciously living in a world of delusions, a world of the recognition of wrongful recognition of inherent existence. You thought that this inherent existence of yours is true, is permanent, is independent. It is not. This body is not permanent. This body is not independent. This body is not given by a creator. How can this body be given by a creator? You created out of your karma. If this body is given by a creator, that creator should have given you a good body. He would not be so cruel as to give you a body that is blind, that is deaf, that is crippled. He would have given you a perfect body. Would he? Otherwise, he wouldn't be called perfect creator. If you are a carpenter, if you are a perfect carpenter, would you create a desk that is crooked? You're only looking for perfection. You will work out a desk that is close to or almost perfect. And somebody said, well, he created a table without a leg for you. He wanted to trap you. He wanted to test you. What's the purpose? Giving you a booby trap to step on?